Okay, girls, today I'm giving you the inside scoop on my favorite place to save this spring. At Ross, it's the spot to get everything you need at prices you'll love. Because when you find brand names for 20 to 60% off other retailers' prices, you'll definitely be finding your next favorite outfit and more. Trust me, you don't want to miss out on these deals on your favorite dresses and tops. And at this price, you might as well throw in a new purse or pair of shoes too. But Ross isn't just about savings, they're about giving back. This year, Ross and their customers raised over $4.1 million to support the Boys and Girls Club and local youth programs to help kids and families thrive. Seriously, just visit your local Ross and see for yourself, because I know you like to keep your closet full and your costs low. So what are you waiting for? Say yes for less at your local Ross.
When Ram won its first Motor Trend Truck of the Year, it was celebrated. But after seven times, what's left to say? The trophy speaks for itself. And now, so does the deal with Employee Pricing Plus. Stop by your local dealer today and take home a Ram truck. Ram, seven-time Motor Trend Truck of the Year. Nothing stops Ram. Offer valid on select 2024 and 2025 Rams for non-FCA employees and retirees. $200 admin fee applies. Not all buyers will qualify. Restrictions apply. See dealer for details. N6225. Ram is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of comics that have come out this week, kicking it off with a biggie, Star Wars number one from
Star Wars.
I can feel the energy rolling off of that.
Star Wars.
I'm interested in meeting these characters. Mm-hmm. I want to get to know a new number one and see what the premise of this book is.
Well, we do know it takes place in the star, and there are wars. The star singular, to be clear. It's from Marvel. Yeah. It's written by Alex Segura.
Too bad we couldn't talk to him about it on our podcast.
We had Alex Segura on our podcast last week, so you can listen to him talk about Star Wars number one.
Timely.
This takes place in the period after Return of the Jedi, and beyond that, takes place after his trilogy of miniseries that he wrote that were sort of concurrently with the Battle of Jakku, so still well before The Force Awakens. And in this issue, we're following our three heroes in three very different locations, but still tying them together. Luke Skywalker is investigating a strange mystery involving another pilot. Leia is dealing with finding out that the New Republic is not going to be as smooth sailing as she thinks
Trouble.
It's going to be. And Han Solo hanging out with old Laser Hands McCyborg.
fucking old Laser Hands. I don't want to start off negative, but it's weird to see Han with no Chewie. You know what I mean? Like, don't
They're
give me
separate
Han
and, people.
Yeah, but I don't want them to be separate.
Since the operation.
I Laser Hands is fun. Like, I love the Tony Stark of it all, and the, you know, I enjoyed him in Terminator 2 and all that kind of stuff, but I just, I felt like he, you didn't get like Terminator vibes from him? He's kind of like an Ash meets Terminator, if you will. I feel like.
I hear you, and it is a little bit of a step away from this era in Star Wars, like what they really had a lot of. There weren't a lot of cyborgs that looked like this. But I will say the rest of the Star Wars canon and all the Star Wars that has come since definitely justifies his laser hands.
I thought this was awesome. I love the art. I think this was a great kind of time period to kind of play in this little pocket here, and I'm excited to see what Alex is going to do. The one small thing is like Han, but no Chewie. I mean, what are we?
Well, you know, Chewie started as a sort of hairy mole on Han's left butt cheek.
No,
sort of grew, and then the operation that Alex mentioned was what separated him.
How dare you?
So they weren't always together. They were very together, and then they were separate. And now,
yeah. Do you know Han's dermatologist actually was like, "Listen, we really got to take off this mole because there's a one in five chance that it could turn out to be cancerous." And he said, "Never tell me the odds."
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And the dermatologist is like,
"Long walk for that one, my friend."
Han was like, "Can you can you get it off? And the dermatologist, it's like shooting womp rats back home.
Oh, boy.
He's like, oh, stay I have a bad target. Feeling about this. I appreciated, I'm a real sucker for the idea of like, whoops, this was harder than we thought it was going to be in this post-Republic period. It just, there's a lot of drama to be eked out there, and it works very well.
Well, yeah, what I think Alex does really well here is he takes, there's, the trade has been forever tied up in Star Wars ever since the prequels came out and all the logistics of Star Wars world. And Alex honors the drama and emotional stakes of the original trilogy with some of those like bureaucratic functions that so many of the other movies delves into. And he ties them together and makes it all interesting as opposed to horribly encumbering like it was in many of the movies, especially the prequels. But I want to shout out one thing, like how about Mon Mothma just becoming the rise of Mon, because probably mostly through Andor, let's say. But Mon is now like a central figure, I feel like, in this era of the Star Wars universe.
I like that as well. And I also want to give a shout out to Phil Noto, as Pete mentioned, is becoming pretty much like the commensurate Star Wars artist at this point. It's great to see him on interiors as well as the covers here. So it's a good looking book as well as a well written one. Why don't we move on?
That's a good looking book.
You're a good looking book.
What? Before we move on, I just want to say it's still a little emotional seeing Princess Leia.
Why? Because you love her.
But she, well, I think all of us
Fisher
loved.
Passed away.
Yeah.
Okay.
I see.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right. Great. Thank you for saying something. Absolute Superman number 7 from DC Comics, written by Jason Aaron, art by Carmine D. Jan Domenico. In this issue, we get Brainiac. Absolute Brainiac is revealed. He's been in shadow since the first issue, but now we find out just how gross he really is, and ooh-wee, he's gross. But I really like the focus of this issue. I do like the new Brainiac as a villain. I thought he was just going to be kind of like a weird guy in a basement, but he's way worse than that. And I also like the riff on Brainiac that ties him very nicely to Superman's anti-corporate bent by actually putting Brainiac on a very similar but also at the same time opposite path. So it's a good setup for a new take on an old villain.
Like the twisted mirror universe version of someone who's been exploited by his station in life and being turned, like the damage that being just a number and a system can do to you. I feel like Superman is fighting against that while Brainiac is the victim of that while also being the monster. I love all that, but I love the just horror nature of this. Like Brainiac, I feel like, is rarely horror. It reminds me of like Superman 3, the scene where the woman gets sucked into the computer. Like that feels like maybe what is a bit of the riff here, because it's very much like bodies and computers mixing in a very gross, visceral way that was great. And another thing that's always bothered me about Brainiac in the DC universe is Brainiac in present day, villain, so evil, very bad. Brainiac in the future is one of the leaders of the Legion and Legionnaires. So it's like those things don't quite ever connect. And I think this comic actually made that connection finally in a good way.
Yeah. I thought the kind of Brainiac body horror thing was interesting. It was kind of a cool thing to kind of see this come up of this Brainiac here. We had some jar horror going on with these worlds here, which is scary. Yeah, it gets me tense just thinking about those worlds and how, just putting it in a glass jar is just not a safe move. Anyways.
Because it's breakable.
It's very breakable, and Brainiac's going to lose you.
It reminds you of the pickle jar in the fridge, which you just can't open, right, Pete?
Oh, boy, that's a fun bit. Anyways, but the problem with this is...
can't win with this guy tonight. Yeah. Oh, boy.
The problem with this is...
Where are you from? Where are you from, sir?
Do some crowd work. Alex, do some crowd work with him. See if you can get him.
I've been loving where this Absolute Superman has been. So this is a little bit of a jump. So I missed what it's been doing previously. But still kind of a cool take.
Anybody in the crowd like Punisher? Anybody here?
Where are Punisher fans at? Round of applause. Boy.
What do I got? Is it my light? No, not yet. Another 10 minutes? All right.
Okay, I got 10 minutes in how great Mephisto is with his marriage work. Anybody? Oh, yay, this crowd.
Blood and thunder.
Blood. Pete's got to move through it. He's got other things to do. Blood and thunder, Pete. You're in for the long haul. We're here for a while, so strap in there, buddy. Blood and Thunder, number one, from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Benito Serrano, art by E.J. Sue. The man behind the curtain here is Robert Kirkman.
Kirkman. It's
based on an idea that he worked out with Benito Serrano. So he's sort of like in a producer, executive producer type capacity. I don't remember what the exact title is. But this is introducing a wild-haired bounty hunter named Blood and her talking gun, Thunder. And it's a riff on the classic crazy cop, straight cop situation, but with a gun and a lady. So there you go. Fun times.
Yeah, if you like Riggs and Murtaugh, you're going to love Gun and Lady.
I don't know.
It's accurate.
All joking aside, I think this is fun.
I was serious.
I love this cover.
Me too.
I think that this is kind of a cool cross between kind of like Brave meets Fifth Element meets like Bounty Hunter type of thing. So I thought this was kind of
Brave. Hold on. Brave because her hair is like big and red.
Yeah, and it's also kind of like a cartoonish kind of animated looking kind of, you know, hairstyle, you know what I mean?
I would give this to a fan of Brave, be like, you're going to love this.
I would.
You would?
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm not a parent, though, but I would definitely do it. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, and you're not a babysitter for my kids anyway, either.
Not anymore.
Just to be clear. Yeah, not after the incident.
Yeah.
There is a lady in here like in Adventures in Babysitting, so I would give this to any fan of Adventures in Babysitting.
Plus, if you like The Office, the Stanley's in this, so you know you want to give it to them as well.
That is accurate.
That is actually funny.
You came around to it.
There's a character in here who is drawn to look just like Stanley from The Office. This reminds me of like an 80s sci-fi action movie that you don't quite remember the title of, but you watched on TBS as a kid. Like, it's very, like, the story is, like, very, like, they're telling you exactly what's happening. The sci-fi elements are interesting, but, like, not, like, mind-bendingly complex. It's, like, right, everything's right there for you.
Yes, agree with that. I also think if you are a fan of Kirkmania and the ultra-violence in titles like Invincible, you get a lot of that here and feels right along the lines of that. So I think it's a fun start.
I think this is a really solid first issue here and a great kind of mix of art and story. I'm very excited to read more about this.
Getting a little deeper on it, a lot of the other... So Blood is a cop, but her gun is like... outdated and right. It talks and it has like, hey, I'm not going to kill these people kind of attitude.
Right.
The other cops are like, you should upgrade to this gun. It doesn't talk and it just kills people. Do you feel like you'd want a less chatty gun or a more chatty gun?
Well, that's the thing, because the chatty gun seems to kind of like just barely be able to fire in time. And you'd like to think maybe that's going to cause some problems down the road. But when you're lonely out there on those stakeouts, you know, it's going to be nice to have a chatty gun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the gun is going to end up being her dad, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. 100%. Cool. We figured it out.
I love that idea. Any gun I have is also my dad.
That's why I always snuggle my gun whenever I go to sleep. Ooh, Fantastic like Four Fanfare, number one from Marvel, written by Mark Waid, Alan Davis, and Andrew Wheeler, art by Ramon Rosanas, Alan Davis, and Sarah Pacelli. This is a new miniseries that gives us all-star teams taking on Fantastic Four stories from back in the day. We get one of Johnny and Ben doing a classic prank war.
Oh, classic, dude. Come on.
We got a Davis-type story, and then we get a backup as well. I thought, yes, I was being very non-specific, but go ahead, Justin.
No, I just want to say I love this. Like, the first story is by Mark Waid, is about how Ben Grimm is basically sentenced after doing some damage and being obnoxious in New York City, sentenced by a judge to not lose his temper for a week. Yeah. And man, did that hit home on this podcast. I was like, oof, if we got a judge.
Can you imagine?
The official thing of this podcast.
Yeah, I don't know if I could do it for a whole week.
We got Pete the Thing LePage, Alex Snuggle My Guns Albin, and Justin No Nickname Tyler.
Yeah, Justin Johnny Storm Tyler over here. I think that the thing is, though, the I would be able to kind of show the judge like how much you guys drive me crazy, and I think the judge would be on my side, so I feel like it would work
out
just
exactly
like it does.
What Justin was saying just now.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I'm agreeing with it. I'm agreeing with this story because it happens with Ben Grimm, too, so it was nice to see.
It's a cautionary tale. Yeah. The second story, Alan Davis, like just great over-the-plate Alan Davis stuff. Alan Davis is the most consistent creator in comics. It's just like it's such a flavor, it's so specific, always on track. But I want to shout out the third story, which I thought was, it's a reality show comedy that actually had some nice stuff as it went on. I won't spoil it, but it was genuinely funny, I thought. Good, like, parody. And then to land it with, like, there's the Mole Man is in it. He has a couple lines at the end that I thought were very funny. And it really just landed for me, this story. So shouts to Andrew Wheeler, the writer of this one, which Wheels. I thought was really good. Sarah Pacelli art as well.
Yeah, this is a great companion to Ryan North's series. It feels in the same sort of just evergreen Fantastic Four tone. So great stuff. Black Canary, the best of the best, number 6 from DC Comics, written by Tom King. Art by Ryan Sook. This is the final issue of this series. It's Black Canary and Lady Shiva go toe-to-toe to prove who is the best of the best in terms of fighting in the DC universe. And Black Canary has made a bet on the side to save her mother's life with Vandal Savage. We get to see the outcome of that here. I like this series.
Whoa.
Watch your tone. Watch your goddamn tone.
Like with a lot of Tom King series, a lot of it depends on the execution of the ending here. And I think he found a sweet spot to make it work really nicely. Even, I think you mentioned this last issue, Justin, but even the occasionally overbearing narration from the announcers who were announcing the fight became rather poignant, I thought, by the end. So, really good conclusion. It's not the sort of thing where it feels like I'm making an overarching statement about everything that we got from, say, Mr. Miracle or... Oh my God! It's not Strange World. What was Strange Adventures? Yes, thank you, and other titles like that. But it is this simple story that really dials in on Black Canary's character in a very nice way.
Yeah, I thought it was crazy touching, really badass. I loved all the kind of twists and turns that we had in this. Plus, you know, JT says loves getting inside people's heads, and you get to really kind of spend some time with Black Canary and her mother. So, I loved all the kind of personal beats that we got in this. I thought it was really powerful and sad to see it go. I love this comic. Every issue was really impressive and well put together. So this is a hell of a story. I'd say check it the fuck out.
Well, getting into the way it concludes, to catch you up, if you haven't been reading this, and spoilers on, if you have and haven't read this issue.
Very touching.
Very touching. The story is built on she has to fight this fight against Lady Shiva, but she has to take a fall in the final round in this issue so that her mom, who's suffering from cancer, can survive. Her mom, who trained her, the harshest training in the world that's built up over these 5 issues. And it came down to what I love about what Tom King did here is it's about, like, her mom would never want her to surrender.
Yeah.
But she has to make the choice to surrender and save her mom's life, but also go against everything her mom has taught her. And because of that little trap of this story, I really didn't know what was going to happen up until I was literally turning the page to get to it. And I just want to shout that out as a really awesome thing to have in comics.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's really rare. And this had me right on the emotional and plot edge at the same time. Something that is, like I'm saying, hard to do. I like the way it turned out. I think it could have gone anyway. She could have fought the fight and won. And her mom could have not gotten the Vandal Savage cure. And that would have been... serving the story. It would have been much sadder to Pete's emotional point.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Or it could have gone the way it went. Like, it was just really, really nice. Really nice read.
Yeah, I think it was really impressive, the twists and turns. And also, like, some great just kind of character moments that it sits in and doesn't move too quick. Just really impressive.
Free Planet, number one from Image Comics, written by Aubrey Sitterson, art by Jed Daugherty. This is about the last free planet of the galaxy. And sure enough, we had Aubrey Sitterson on the show a couple of weeks back to talk about this on the live show. So yes, you can check out that chat. This is a visually wildly creative book, like we talked about there. But now that he's not on the podcast, what'd you guys really think about it?
What? Wow. Don't set it up like that.
I always do that. That's my bit.
Oh, man. I mean, that's why fun we bits do this. And the stack is when we get real, guys. This is mm-hmm. not, this is no punches.
We're live on the live show all the time.
All the time. Oh, that's constant not true.
That's not, no, no way, man.
Pete doesn't even like quizzes.
I love your book. Oh, it's so good.
Hey, come on. That's not true, man. We do like a lot of the stuff.
Oh, there's a secret quiz. Oh, it's time to turn it over to our favorite section because you guys make it up. Your audience questions. That's not true.
My name is Alex.
Yeah, exactly.
Lies. Nothing.
So that. Something that you guys dodged before that I didn't get to talk about the last time we talked about it, but I'm glad it's come up again. The wolf, the bear, the raven, which clan are you guys joining?
Wolf. I don't know. What did you think about this book?
We don't know what they mean yet.
I know. I just, the sigh that Alex gave made me so happy. It's like, oh, God, I hate this. Do this.
It's like a mosquito went up his nose. That's what you want out of your friend.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what people want out of their podcasts, too.
We talked about this before, I really love the art in this. The double-page spread with the infographics mm-hmm. I thought really worked well. The robot loving got a little bit weird, but man, just fun last panel. I'm excited to read more. This is a great package.
Love is
nothing
love,
wrong
man.
With
don't
robot
shame.
Loving. That's right. And we talked about this on the in the live show, but like Aubrey put so much thought and density in this story. While it does feel almost like you're reading a scroll and from an ancient civilization a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away about
what?
All these big ideas playing out on this these alien worlds. So yeah, it's big. It feels like an epic story that we're just opening the first chapter of.
Ultimate Wolverine, number 5 from Marvel, written by Chris Condon, art by Alex Linz. In this issue, meet Ultimate Sabretooth, who goes toe-to-toe with Ultimate Wolverine, with a surprising ending here. Lots to talk about in this issue. But Pete, these are your two little baby boys. How'd you feel about this?
Yeah, this was really interesting because we kind of have a twist in this, which I thought was interesting, where Creed is the good guy and Logan is kind of the bad guy in this. But, you know, great to see Natasha sniff. But, yeah, I thought this was really cool. Yeah, because she died. Oh, my God. Do you guys keep up with current events or what the fuck, man?
You're talking about the character of Black Widow in the movie Avengers Endgame died?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
What?
So when you see her here, you're like, wow. Oh, man, Natasha. Yeah.
Real quick, shout to you, Alex, for knowing what the fuck Pete was talking about right there. He said the word sniff. And you were like, I know what he means.
It's all right. You just need to think of what is the craziest train of thought you possibly could take. The end of that, that's what Pete's talking about.
Yeah, but this book is getting better and better the more we kind of find out, and it's really impressive. I love the art, love the action.
All aboard the crazy train is what this podcast is all about. I agree. This book, this issue especially, like dropping, having Wolverine be the villain essentially here is really nice. And it's a nice spot for him to be in this universe. It's playing out the Winter Soldier thing, but in a much more intimate storyline between characters that know each other. While Winter Soldier was like, who is that? And it was like, we know. This is like, we know, so we don't have to, it's not about like a easily solvable mystery. It's about the stakes for all these characters as they encounter people they know, and that's really good.
I have one question, and I do like this book, and I like the fight. It's very visceral, very brutal throughout. I do like the switch, as we're talking about. Really curious to see what happens next. There is a beat here, though. We've talked about this before, the fact that Wolverine is wearing a mask. In the first issue, I believe we talked about, at least I had speculated reading it, like, ooh, who is it? Maybe it's not Logan behind the mask. And by the end of the issue, you're like, no, it's Logan behind the mask. He's just wearing a mask, I guess. And then this issue, Sabretooth goes through the same thing where he's like, why are you wearing this mask? I got to find out what's under the mask. And he takes it off. And the secret is he has a very big, bushy beard.
A big beard, which is probably itchy, I would
say.
Very
uncomfortable under that
mask. A metal mask with a sweaty beard? Yuck.
What's going on there? Why is that a reveal? I feel like I'm missing something.
I agree with you. It is weird how emphasized it is without any commentary. And it may be the referencing the Winter Soldier of it all, where like it was about the mask and the reveal for the characters. That's the only thing I can think of, unless the mask is somehow going to mean something down the road.
Yeah. I guess we'll see.
DC High Volume, Batman. The Dark Knight's definitive DC comic stories, adapted directly for audio for the very first time.
Fear. I have to make them afraid.
He's got a motorcycle. Get after him or I'll have you shot.
You mean blow up the building?
From this moment on, none of you are safe.
New episodes every Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, girls, today I'm giving you the inside scoop on my favorite place to save this spring. At Ross, it's the spot to get everything you need at prices you'll love. Because when you find brand names for 20 to 60% off other retailers' prices, you'll definitely be finding your next favorite outfit and more. Trust me, you don't want to miss out on these deals on your favorite dresses and tops. And at this price, you might as well throw in a new purse or pair of shoes too. But Ross isn't just about savings. They're about giving back. This year, Ross and their customers raised over $4.1 million to support the Boys and Girls Clubs and local youth programs to help kids and families thrive. Seriously, just visit your local Ross and see for yourself. Because I know you like to keep your closet full and your costs low. So what are you waiting for? Say yes for less at your local Ross.
Absolute Green Lantern number 2 from DC Comics, written by Al Ewing, art by Janoia Lindsay. In the previous issue, we saw an enormous Green Lantern symbol fall down in a small town, and an alien named Abin Sur show up. In cutting forward to, I guess, the present, Hal Jordan has an evil black hand that is absorbing everything. And Joe Mulan has Green Lantern powers. We find out a bit more about that, as well as some more horrible things that happened to the small town this issue. This is a little bit external to this, but I think we all really liked the first issue of this. And then nobody else did. And that's not exactly true, but I definitely in our Discord, people were like, I really didn't like that issue. This was my least favorite Absolute one so far. I saw a bunch of reviews in that direction, which I was very surprised about because I thought the first issue was very good. What did you guys think about the second one? Has public opinion turned you?
Well, a little bit. Not public opinion, but this issue a little bit.
Private
first
opinion.
Off, cool cover.
Private opinion.
I love the start of this. I love the art, the kind of like the movie The Ring kind of creepy tone this kind of starts with.
Because they're wearing a ring?
Yeah, like
no,
the movie
because
The Ring.
Of that, well,
the movie The Ring is famously about people wearing rings.
It starts off with this kind of black well thing.
Oh, I see.
Oh, yeah.
The first couple of panels. Jesus Christ, guys. Anyways.
I don't know. You're making a lot of references this episode.
Yeah exactly. And maybe Pete saved that for private opinion.
Never. But it was weird when they were like, hey, what's wrong? He was like, I have black hand. I was like, that's what we're going to go with, guys? Like, we're just going to say he's got black hand?
Yeah, exactly. What happened to Adam Sandler and Mr. Deeds?
That was Blackfoot.
I said it's like that. I didn't say it was exactly that.
Yeah.
Yes, is that Black a reference? There's a character called the Black Hand in the main continuity. So, yes, that is what they're going with.
All right. Well, I was just kind of like, ugh.
It was a racist thing, is what you're saying.
Well, it's just,
it's not what want. It's definitely not that.
Definitely not.
I would think you would think it would be more like a Venom situation because it's a goopy black hand.
It is goopy, yeah.
I do really like the horror of this book, I want to say. That's it.
Well, I was going to sort of say something in that direction. It feels like all of our Green Lanterns are like the small town of a horror movie. Like, they all know each other. They're all sort of in different places, but coming into this and being like, this is something bad is happening here. It doesn't feel like it's going well for any of them. The thing that I think is hard about this book is it's hard to grab onto anything because we're hearing this story in a couple different timelines, but it's not the most clear when we're jumping between them. And, you know, it's hard to tell how anything works because everything is so different from main continuity besides the people and the general idea of rings, a Green Lantern, and other stuff. So it's just there's another veil has to come off of what's happening. I think we thought maybe it was going to be in this issue, but maybe it's next issue.
Maybe the thing that needed to happen here, and this is not going to happen at this point, but to your point about saying it's kind of like a horror movie in a small town, the thing of that is like, usually get some sort of inciting kill, but otherwise the first half hour, 45 minutes of the movie is spent with getting to know the characters and getting to care about them before they start getting killed off. Here, all of these characters already know each other. They're already in the situation, and there's certainly a certain worth to just thrusting us into it and going forward there. But I don't know this Hal Jordan. I don't know this Joe Mullen. I don't know this John Stewart yet, who seems very different in particular than our John Stewart. So yeah. It would have been worth having that like oversized first issue where we really get to know and fall in love with these characters before they're ripped apart. Like, to give a specific spoiler, we meet Guy Gardner, who's the chief of police, who is not like the Guy Gardner of the main universe, and 2 pages later he gets disintegrated. And I'm like, okay, I don't feel anything because this was a different guy. If this was Guy Gardner who we knew, yes, but I didn't know him yet, and I didn't know he was the chief of police until 2 pages earlier.
Until he was disintegrated. I agree with you completely. I feel like that, not even just not knowing that was hard to process, it unsettled my understanding of all the other characters because of how different he was. And they kept calling him Guy. Well, what happened to Guy? Guy Gardner. I'm like, that dude is not Guy Gardner in any way. He's like a sort of a mild-mannered police chief. And I was like, that's Guy Gardner's personality is everything about him. So, like, it just felt like such a disjuncture from what we normally know that it cast everything into doubt a little bit.
Yeah. I did really like the art style, though. It kind of has a cool kind of anime feel. Yes,
and the perspective was very cool. Like, the cover we're talking about here is very cool, if you talk about that. Yep. Covers.
Yeah, but Pete doesn't really talk about covers too much. Los Monstruos, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by James Robinson, art by Jesus Marino. Hey, this is James a new Robinson. Series about a werewolf detective in a sort of, one might call it a zootopia for monsters, if you will. Hey. He's like kind of like the Judy Hopps in a certain way, but he's a werewolf and he's investigating mysteries.
Wow. I think that's the clearest connection. It's a lot like Pete. If
does it hurt your brain? Does it hurt your brain?
I think like me this? Saying this is like Zootopia for Monsters is much more on the money than that is Merida because they both have red hair.
I mean, yes, you are right. End of
comment.
Well,
first off, I was talking about the characteristics. I mean, they're both kind of like, all right, I'm not going to, you know what? It's not worth fighting.
Merida.
I do think this is a fun cover. I love this idea of this comic. It's well executed, this werewolf detective. I mean, this is fun stuff. I like the story so far. I'm excited for the next issue. I think this is a total package here. I'm very excited about this.
Feels like James Robinson is very much into this, like, opening a door into other world storytelling, like with the other book that we've talked about a lot that
Welcome
I think
to the Maynard.
Welcome to the Maynard that Pete was a huge fan of. Is that for sure? And this has that same quality to it. And I like that. I feel like it's nice big world thinking while still focusing on the life and storyline of this one particular werewolf. So it's cool. I don't think we know too much about the plot yet, but curious to follow that thread.
All New Venom, number 6 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Carlos Gomez. In this issue, we got Venom and Mary Jane sitting down to tell the story of how they got together, and I think we can all agree, endgame for this couple.
Barf.
Right, Pete?
Barf-o-rama.
I mean, here's the thing. I just one more victory lap on me.
What are you about to say?
One more victory lap on me calling the Mary Jane was All New Venom, because this issue is literally about it. Mm-hmm. And we're deep into Mary Jane. Not only is Mary Jane, who was Spider-Man's girlfriend and then wife and dealt with a lot of that superhero life, became Jackpot, a superhero in her own right. Went on all these adventures with Paul in different dimensions, had kids that weren't real. Now they live in New York in a pretty chill environment and have adopted Venom's actual son. And now she's also Venom. So there's a lot going on there. But I still like this. I like that this book is owning all that continuity, which is heavy, and sort of plowing through it, still telling a story. My one quibble is I think it's fucked up that she calls Paul Tiger.
Yeah.
That's not cool.
Not cool at all.
Tiger's Pete's nickname.
Cool. What should she call him then? Leopard?
Paul. Anything else.
Panther?
Call him Paul.
Lion baby?
The whole thing is like, it calls into question, like, that's her iconic line from, like, classic Spider-Man lore. And it felt like, is Tiger just what she calls anybody? Is she like getting a Snickers bar? And she's like, hey, Tiger, thanks for this lunch.
Absolutely.
Bar.
Wait, you did. There is no way that Tiger is just the word for Peter Parker. Particularly at that point, is not a guy that you'd walk in the door and be like, ooh, Tiger.
Well,
what the fuck is that?
I'm not saying she was looking at him and identifying him as Tiger, but what I'm saying is like that felt like there was an intimacy associated with it and a flirtation and the beginnings of love there. And I want that to be specific. It's like if you are someone who anytime you meet someone, you're like, oh, I'm going to make them the same playlist that I make for every person that I've dated in my life.
That's
like,
what
that's
you do.
Fuck. No, it's not. That's what not you do. Cool.
But it works.
No,
it works.
Yeah, but you're a scumbag. That's what it is.
You're take them on the same scumbag. Date, pretend that you're going on it the first time ever, and you're like, oh, we should go over to this place. I've never been here before.
Here's how you told on yourself, Alex. You said, pretend. You said, pretend you're doing it for the first time. That's how you know it's wrong. If you were like, hello, yep, this is the date. I go on this date with everyone. No problem there, right?
No.
Woman I've dated.
And you call them Tiger, and you make them the same mixtape, obviously. Come on.
I wrote down about this is I hope this is for somebody and that they are enjoying it, because I am not.
I'm enjoying it. This issue was a bit more info dumpy by design because we're working in things from like the Venom War storyline and the spinoff issues and other things like that. They're like, hey, remember when this happened in Venom War Spider-Man? I'm like, I certainly do not. But thank you very much, sir, for telling me what went on there. And then running through the entirety of All New Venom, but from their perspective. But I do think this is an interesting, pretty messed up scenario. The fact that Mary Jane basically died and Venom also died. They're both dead and brought back, and now there's a major complication for a relationship with Paul, where Paul's like, I can't deal with this, and I don't want to deal with this.
And they even say, they're like, well, oh, that's why we haven't been having sex then. And she's like, yup. And he's like, well, that's fucked up.
The whole thing. But that's what you should be doing, is getting these characters in a situation where you're like, this is very frustrating, and I don't know what to do about this. So I don't know. We talked a lot about how the first couple of issues presented this mystery scenario. I thought that worked really, really well, but I was curious to see how it'll keep going. Now we basically have like Blood and Thunder, we have buddy cops, but they're in the same body, this mismatched pair. There's a really fun cliffhanger at the end here that I thought was really well worded in a way that was interesting. Yeah. I'm really digging this book. So, Pete, this book's for me.
It's also for me. And I'm just saying, maybe she could say, like, face it, meow, meow. You just hit the bingo or something. You let's change it up a little bit.
Face it, meow, meow. You hit the pow, pow.
Exactly. Easy.
Yeah, that's great.
Tiger, well, not cool.
I have a time machine. We can go back in time, talk to Stan Lee about this, and I think we'll be good to go.
No, I don't want her to have said that to Peter. I want her to change it meow, for Paul. Meow.
Well, so that she could have said tiger to Paul, and it would be okay. That's what you're saying.
No, I don't, Alex. Now you're making me mad. This is
fucking painful.
Resurrection Man, Quantum Karma, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Ron V, art by Anand R.K. and Jackson Butch Gweiss. Just to mention, Jackson Butch Gweiss sadly passed away about a week ago. That sucks. He was great. Yeah. He was also 63, which is way too young. So really
and has some sad art in the next issue that's coming out next month for this as well.
In his page, he only does one page in here, but it's so good. It is just a recap page, but the way that he expressed the characters, the way that he played with lines and form, great stuff. He will be sorely missed. That said, we do have the rest of this comic book, which is interesting because it pits Resurrection Man, a guy who has the powers to constantly come back to life with a new power, is going up against a skeleton man who cannot die, who just really wants to eat him.
What's with... I feel like Ram V is really into cannibalism. Like, every book is just trending.
Do you think he's, like, floating it? Like, he's floating it out there?
Yeah.
Like, oh, like, what do you think? This bad? Good? What do you think?
It's fine if I eat people. There's so many comics out about that. The ones that I wrote about
doing that.
They
sell really well, so people must be into that.
Oh, my God.
You think he does the thing, like, with where he's, like, with his fellow comic book artists and writers, where he puts them in a big pot, and he's like, here, can you sit in here for a while? And then, like, he comes by with a little salt and pepper, and like in a Bugs Bunny cartoon?
When
I cook something, I put it alive in a pot and then slowly season it over time.
Yeah, they never
catch
on.
That's what I do, too. I cook loony style. I'm sort of a loony chef.
I believe that about you.
Yeah. You think I'm loony? You think I'm sort of loony style?
I agree, yes. First off, this is a crazy cool cover. Inside, though, this is really artistically impressive. Love the splash panel of Ray Palmer kind of fight sequence. Just really impressive. The panel size and the color choices is just amazing looking. I really just didn't want to leave some of these panels. The like Dragon Ball Z kind of like chi fight thing was just amazing. And the back matter with the kind of black and white stuff was also really awesome. And I'm so happy that they shared these with us.
I also enjoyed this. I feel like Ram V's doing so much like big mythological storytelling in a lot of his work lately, and it continues here in this book.
Grommets, number 7 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender and Brian Posehn, art by Brett Parson. This is the final issue of this book that I don't know when the last issue came out, but it's been
a bit.
Yeah, skate culture in the 80s. Our heroes were beaten up by a bunch of jocks. And this issue, they're trying to get back at them. It doesn't quite work. And instead, they got to move out of town. So everything wraps up for the moment here. What'd you guys think? What'd you think about this last issue and this book as a whole?
The thing I liked about this the most, I thought the art's fantastic. It really captured the vibe of being young and California of it all. But what I like about especially this issue is it tied up in a messy way, the same way that life works when you're young, where you don't always settle everything. It doesn't always, like, you don't get the clean, like, they got beat up last issue. It does. They don't win. They just have to sort of walk off, and because life intercedes. One our main character is moving away. His friend, they have a nice moment, and then it's not working out. But then something good does happen. He gets to sort of have a moment with the girl that he likes, but then maybe nothing happens after that. Like, it's just really like they did a great job of like bringing childhood to the end of this in a great way.
All right, so we got to talk about the ending a little bit because it kind of has a little bit of a Sopranos ending, which I didn't appreciate. But cool cover. I really felt kind of seen as a young kid who was trying to skateboard and make friends and have fun and build
half-pipes. How far did you get in the shred?
I have me some boards. I still got some boards. We used to build jumps and kill each other, and not really, but just like build jumps that were too high, and then it'd be like, we need to get helmets. It was a whole thing. But I really felt like they did a good job of capturing this. But then the kind of fade to black in this issue is a little upsetting, because he's on the top of this giant ramp and we don't know what happens to him. And I was like, dude,
yeah, but that's great.
Does he shred or does he bail? Yeah. Like, what happens? You know,
it's up for you to decide.
And frankly, I thought the pacing of doing that in a comic book, the way they do that over two panels with just he's on top, he's perpendicular, and then it goes straight down, your click as a sound effect, and that's it. Perfect ending.
Nope.
I agree. I loved it.
Not perfect ending. You set me up, and then you just don't pay it off.
Whatever you want it to be.
Pete, well, what do you think? It's always something that bothers you. You don't like ambiguity. Do you think he nailed it or failed it?
I think he failed it.
Mm. He died.
Yeah, died.
Wow. That's awful.
Well, Pete, that sounds like... That sounds like something you should reserve for private opinion. Because it's not cool to think that.
Well, X-Men number 16.
You think he nailed it?
Nope. And they never told us. It's ambiguous. We'll never
know. It's whatever you want it to be. It's whatever you want it to be.
I was asking you, Justin.
No. It's whatever you want it to be. They say in the Value Matter, they're like, hey, guys, we know this was ambiguous. It's whatever Pete wants it to be.
I love open-endedness.
Yeah. Also, speaking of ambiguity, we'll never tell you. X-Men number 16 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Netho Diaz. In this issue, the X-Men are fighting a new evil X-Men, and one of the new evil X-Men is named Juice, and his powers are juice.
So here's the problem with that, is they... I was
juice
like,
is oh. delicious.
Well, yeah.
I love juice. I can't hate juice. I can't be mad at juice.
Well, the problem is... I was like, okay, great, call him the Juice, but don't make a reference to O.J. Simpson, which they did when he yelled the juice is loose. And I was like, well, that's not smart. That really doesn't help.
It was weird
all.
That he said the juice is loose, and then one of the other characters couldn't put on some gloves, and one of them was like, if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit.
I think Magneto said that.
Magneto said that. That's right.
I think there's things you can joke about, and then there's what we're talking about.
Do you feel like it is that Juice is O.J. Simpson in this, in the 616 universe?
Probably.
Because we don't know. I mean, obviously, we don't know his identity. He's passed in our universe, but maybe O.J. Simpson it lives on in the Marvel universe.
As Juice. I don't know if it's okay to joke about this, guys.
Why? Just a person. We can talk about O.J. Simpson. He likely murdered his wife and another dude, and he was free. He went to jail for some of his stealing memorabilia. Like, his life is definitely talk aboutable.
Yeah, I think so. And like, we all know what happened to him, and it's actually kind of a nice story. He's now still in hell looking for the real murderer.
Like to think that he's in hell as Juice. He's Juice.
Yeah. Can you have juice in hell, or does it just evaporate?
Only really bad juice, like grape.
You don't like grape? Not
no,
even like a
that's
white
hell
grape?
Juice.
Dude, grape juice is awesome.
White grape? What are you, rich? White grape juice? Well. Put your white glove. If the white glove don't fit, you must a sip.
Have we avoided talking about this book long enough that we can move on to the next one? Or do we
I think we can just move
I also
on.
Wanted to point out that the Magic had a couple lines that I just didn't feel like were Magic. But
what did you think about the line where Juggernaut was like, I'll gnash your bones for my bread? Like an ogre?
I agree with you.
I'm not sure what's happening in this comic, and I don't like it.
It is weird what's happening in this comic. There's a lot of weird ideas here. Edie's like, you X-Men are, this villain's like, you X-Men are dinosaurs. She's like, dinosaurs, I'm the meteor wannabe. Everything's a little like, what exactly are these people doing and thinking and talking about?
Also, I know I complained about this last issue. They're still in the snow. Like, they have been fighting different people in the snow for, I want to say, 36 issues so far. I know that's not true, but...
Well, Alex, they live in the snow. If you live in the snow, sure. That's where you fight. So, like,
I guess.
It's like if someone was like, Alex, all of your fights are on sidewalks. What the fuck?
I don't know. I'd be like, let's go into an office building. What do you think? There's other places. Let's go to Central Park.
Yeah, but the thing
is. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. This isn't working. Moving on. Two-Face number 6 from DC Comics, written by Christian Ward, art by Fabio Veras. This is the final issue of this series as Two-Face and Harvey Dent fight for control. I thought this was great. This was a defining series for Two-Face. It really struck me this last issue as there is a good woman who he has been teaming up with who wants him to be the still bad but slightly better Harvey Dent. And then there's his daughter, not Duella Dent, but his new daughter who wants him to be the fully bad Harvey Dent, fully bad Two-Face, excuse me. This has really been a riff on some of the best Two-Face storylines of all time and then remixing them into something that feels fresh and new and pushing the character forward while still keeping to the issue format. Like, we still get the trial format here. We still get the white church and everything and all of the characters. It brings things together really nicely. I thought this was great. And then beyond that, the art by Fabio Veras is just gorgeous throughout.
Yeah, I also enjoyed this, and I agree with you about all the Two-Face stuff, but one of the things that struck me in this is Mr. Zazz makes an appearance as a villain who's tracking down the woman Lake that Two-Face is trying to sort of rescue him and make him better, and his numbers on his body talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
That's never happened before, right?
I gotta tell you, this is the first time Zazz has ever worked for me. And it was all because of that device. Yes, because my problem with Zazz is the rest of the Gotham City villains all have a certain theatricality from them that come off of Batman. Like, they all are reflections and mirrors of different parts of Batman in some way, particularly when the writers are writing them the right way. Zazz is like, you know what I do? I kill people, and then I make a bloody mark on my body, the end. And that's something that is like, I don't know, this is just like, you're just a serial killer with a gross thing that you do.
I mean, I take your point. That's a nice way of summing it up. Tell me how Calendar Man is a reflection of Batman.
Not
and
all
Mr.
Of it,
Zazz.
The good ones.
Mr. Zazz.
The good ones.
Oh,
the good ones.
You're striking Calendar.
Yes, Batman's Man is always like, on time. I have time. A tattoo around my head.
Well, that's why you're like,
very punctual.
No, I didn't say literally all of them. I meant like Joker, Scarecrow, Two-Face, Penguin, etc. They all come off of him in certain ways. Those are the iconic ones. A lot of the newer ones don't work in the same way, and it's hard because you've already like hit almost every aspect of Bruce at this point. Zazz does not work for me. Here, I don't know necessarily that it's a reflection of Batman, but I do think like the explanation of he is talking to his scars, which I don't think are literally talking to him, it's part of his psychosis,
I thought was
really interesting. Like that he is marking himself to store his victims as part of himself. That is something that I do think is more theatrical, is more arch, is weirder than just dude who is a cutter who kills people.
Yeah, just the keeping score feels a little, simple. This feels a little bit more, like you're saying, mad or insane or whatever you'd want to attach to it, that elevates him. Like, the numbers themselves are craving more numbers, so that's why he kills. It's cool. I think that's, and I just to clarify, I hadn't seen that before, so maybe that's the first we're getting that, but hopefully that could enter the canon a bit.
I just wanted to say I'm a big fan of Zazz, and I don't appreciate this Zazz talk.
Okay, this is an honest question, because as you may have heard around the way, I don't like Zazz. Why do you like it?
Around the way.
Well, because Zazz led to No Ho Hank, and No Ho Hank was such an achievement that, that's right. Don't try to have a conversation with me, buddy. You know what I mean? I'll take it to Crazy Town and blow your mind every time.
Here's a question. That's a weird thing to count as like a quality. You're like, hey, don't try to talk to me. I'm impossible.
That's right. But what I did like about this Two-Face is
Tiger, you just hit the crackpot.
What's impressive about
now
this
that works.
Two-Face comic is each issue they were really trying to do something different with Two-Face, which I really appreciated. I got a little worried early on that it was just always going to be like, well, it was the other side of me that foiled me again. But they really pushed past that and got to some really cool places with Two-Face. It won me over every issue. And I got to say, it was impressive writing-wise, but also artistically what is accomplished in this book, because the art is also really great in this.
Yeah. And it also reminds me of Aaron Eckhart, who played him in The Dark Knight, and I love I, Frankenstein, so that's
great call, dude. Great call.
Here, don't be more like Pete to fight Pete, because that's only going to make me crazy. Yes.
The Moon Is Following Us, number 9 from Image sure Comics, written by Daniel Warren Johnson, art by Riley Rosmo and Daniel Warren Johnson. In this issue, the two parents of Penny are still fighting for survival in the dream world, and one of them isn't going to make it out alive.
Oh, no.
Potentially.
Sure. First off, cool cover. This is an awesome book, continues to be amazing, so creative, very intense. This mom and dad trying to save their child. I cannot wait to read the next issue. I cannot wait to see how this ends. It's very creative and cool, but also kind of scary. Just can't say enough about the artistic team behind this. It's really impressive art.
The art's really nice. I think this story was a little wobbly in the first bit. Dick. Found its footing. And then now and the next issue that concludes the story. And so I think a lot will be on that. But this issue, it still is a little like, it feels like it's just been expanded a bit. A fewer number of issues or something would just make it condensed more and offer more clarity, because it feels just a little like wandery in between some of the tentpole moments. And so this issue felt a little bit that way to me.
I agree. I like this artistic team in general. They're two of my favorite artists. This is not working for me. Like you're saying, Justin, it's too crowded at points in some of the panels. The action doesn't necessarily seem to connect a lot of the times. A lot of the dialogue, particularly throughout this issue, is just people kind of like shouting at each other. I mean, Pete's going to hate it when I say this out loud, but this actually reminded me a lot of what Daniel Warren Johnson has been doing over at Transformers, which is the same sort of thing where it's just like things smashing against to each other and shouting things like, come on, not now, we got to go. And like, that's not where his strength is. His strength is in the emotion, the lives of the characters. And there's a moment towards the end here that should hit much harder, but it was so hard to follow what was going on before that. I didn't ultimately end up feeling very emotionally affected when it happened. So it's a bit of a bummer.
Yeah, but we also haven't seen the last issue of this. We don't see how he's going to land the ship and tie all the things around.
This
do those things that you're thinking.
Absolutely. This started very strong. Like I said, I remember very distinctly in the first two issues being like, Daniel Warren Johnson has done it again. Sneaks out another sneaky punch of the gut emotion at the end of every issue. That happened in issue 1 and issue 2. And since then, I think like trying to describe a dream to somebody, this just frays out in weirder and weirder directions where it's harder to hold on the story as it goes.
It definitely has dream logic, and I think that's purposeful to the story, but it just ends up feeling like a dream and describing a dream where there isn't much to hold on to.
I'm hoping, though, that it ends so well that you guys will be like, oh, I was wrong. This is really
And maybe right. It will. I don't think I'll say I was wrong, but I will say, like I said before, I feel like halfway through this, it really crystallized in a good way. And like Alex is saying, started strong, had a nice issue right in the middle that like landed it for a bit, and then just wobbled a bit as it's coming in. Maybe we'll really like the ending, and Pete will continue to be friends with us.
The Amazing Spider-Man, number 3 from Marvel, written by Joe Kelly, art by Pepe Larraz. Spider-Man has been poisoned for mysterious reasons, which he is looking into more this issue. Meanwhile, there are a bunch of evil forces that are coalescing around him at the same time. And of course, he's got a classic Spider-Man thing where he's got lots of stuff to do, including not going to his job basically ever, even though he just got it. He's got a girlfriend who he just wants to hang out with.
Named Shay. And I think we can now say with definition, her name is Shay Markin.
Yeah, there you go. We're learning new things about Shay Markin all the time. Markin on the board. She's got a last name. I really like this run on Amazing Spider-Man so far. You know, yes. I talked about the first two issues, how well Joe Kelly has balanced everything and nailed the voice. I think that continues in this third issue, too. There's a lot of weird danger coming from him and weird characters. But, like, I don't know. The story beats are really interesting and surprising. Like, this character Itsy Bitsy that he brought back from a Spider-Man yes. Deadpool run that, honestly, I don't know anything about. But he brings us up to speed very quickly. There's a super creepy moment where she tries to, like, lick his mask and then push him off.
I think kissing.
Yeah, but the way that Pepe Larraz draws that is exactly the right mix of, like, ooh, this is a little romantically intriguing, but at the same time, I'm grossed out. I don't know how to feel about this. And you're right where Spider-Man is at that moment. So I really think this title is firing on all cylinders.
I agree. It feels so fresh to a Spider-Man run to have all these things happening. Spider-Man constantly feeling guilty, defining quality for him. But the fact that it's being told through the lens of this drug trip that he's on is really smartly done. It lets it be worse for him, and it makes it less of a, like, oh, woe is me, and something that he is actually a victim to. So I think that's really working. And I just like it just feels very different with his cast of characters, what he's going through. This dude who's hired him at this place, really flexible boss, really chill. Let him get away with it. There's a villain reveal on the last page that is not my favorite villain, but I'm excited to see this villain perhaps refreshed by this team that I'm really enjoying.
Yeah, I thought it was a cool kind of villain reveal on the last panel. I think this is a very cool cover. I think Joe Kelly is an amazing writer. I just got nothing to ship and nothing to root for yet, but I'm hoping.
You hate Shay?
Yeah, not a Shay fan.
Itsy Bitsy? Itsy Bitsy Spider?
Nope, not an Itsy Bitsy fan either.
Interesting.
Wow. One last thing, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm really liking Green Goblin, Norman Osborn, as the man in the chair that we're getting here.
I can't believe you're saying that either.
It's working. Yep. In this issue especially, I think it's really working.
I agree.
Ready to make the most of your summer? Enroll in summer classes at JJC. With sessions just 6 or 8 weeks long, you can earn credits quickly and still enjoy your summer. Whether you're starting your college journey, advancing your career, or transferring credits, JJC has something for everyone. Classes begin on May 19th, June 2nd, and June 30th. Visit jjc.edu/college to register today.
Now at Verizon, we're locking in low prices for 3 years guaranteed on my plan. And you can get a single line for just $45 a month when you switch and bring your phone. That's our best price ever on unlimited welcome with AutoPay plus taxes and fees guaranteed for 3 years. Because at Verizon, we got you. Visit your local Chicago Verizon store today. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Price guarantee applies to then current base monthly rate. Additional terms and conditions apply.
Batgirl number 7 from DC Comics, written by Tate Bromble, art by Isaac Goodhart. In this issue, per the cover, Cassandra Cain takes a train to...
Cain on the train, Cain just like we train. All said.
Cain on the train.
She's my main Cain on the train, you know what I'm talking about. And she finds out more about her mother's life, Lady Shiva, as previously seen in the Black Mirror book, who died.
Same character.
And now we're finding out about her life story. Gotta say, I don't think she's totally dead, but I thought this was a really nice, interesting, very different story mode for this title.
Plus a cool cover. Awesome cover, right, Alex, with the train window reflection? That's pretty cool.
That was cool how you described the cover instead of just saying cool cover.
Pete, you love this book, right?
Yes, this is an unbelievable book. I love this. I've been loving every issue of this. I'm having a blast with this comic. This continues to be great. Please never stop making this comic. I want to live here forever.
Wow. Pete, describing heaven as reading this Batgirl book.
That's
he
right.
wants to live there forever. I also enjoy this. I like just to
get in the heads, bro. This is your this is your sweet spot.
Not the heads. We're getting in the pages of a good book, and we get to see Cassie just really dip into it on the cane on the train, and really enjoy a story about her mom's life. I like that it's just a new arc, very different story, but still germane to what's come before. Funny to think this is the same Shiva that was fighting Black Canary, because it's wildly different, much more sympathetic in this book. Curious to see how it's going to, just to hear this story about Lady Shiva.
Yeah. Let's move on. Talk about Mouse Guard, Dawn of the Black Axe, number 2 from Archaea, are written by David Pearson, art by Gabriel Rodriguez.
Come on!
This issue, our mousy hero fights a ridiculous amount of snakes. Pete, snakes, why did it have to be snakes?
Oh, man. Get these fucking snakes off this fucking plane. First off, unbelievable team here. This is a dream team scenario here. Unbelievable art, unbelievable storytelling. I'm so happy that this is back. And yeah, Indiana Jones would be so happy for Mouse Guard here taking down all these fucking snakes, like so many goddamn snakes. Yeah, I mean, this is just such a blast. I love the adorable little mice and the fact that they're badass as hell. I'm having such a fun time with this, and yeah, this is just so cool.
Has this book made you more sympathetic to actual mice?
No.
You live in the country. You must encounter mice on the daily basis. Like, they're like making your clothes and stealing your cheese and such.
Pete?
Yeah, I...
Pete, can you please weigh in on my mouse question?
You have been asked a question, Pete. Answer the question.
I don't like mice. I never have. You know, I don't know what to tell you, man.
Really?
Yeah.
If we ever were invited on or near your property or house, which, again, dream...
And you're always invited, Justin.
This is a hypothetical situation. You have not told us where it is.
Anytime.
You have not told us where your house is.
You're
We've been able to geolocate the general area, but you've never given us an address. But what I want to say is, if we were hypothetically to bring tiny, fantastical weapons, and were to like glue or tape them using the page scotch tape from Canada to the mice in your lawn, and you were able to walk out your door and see them holding little weapons, would that really make you fall in love?
You know, it might sway me a little bit. It would, just because I do love Mouse Guard that much. But hopefully it's my backyard and not my front yard.
Nice. Oh, I've let them into your house. I've let 100 mice with tiny plastic weapons into your house. You're going to love it. It's sort of a Mouse Guard immersive experience. You're going to really like it.
There's a bunch of snakes around, too, by the way, so check it out.
Which side are you on? The snake side, Pete?
Gorgeous art here. Yes. Gabriel Rodriguez is
great. Come on, Gabriel Rodriguez. You remember that guy, right?
I do. He's
love
the best.
That guy. Yeah. Where's Pete's cameo in this? I asked. Where's the Pete Mouse?
There is a pretty hairy deer, so. Let This One Be a Devil, number 3 from Dark Horse Comics, written by James Tynion IV and Steve Fox, art by Piotr Kowalski. This is plumbing into the myth of the Jersey Devil and in various timelines, showing us why people believe the Jersey Devil is real, how maybe it is not real. And the end of this issue certainly leads me to believe that we are headed for a tragedy in the final one.
Ooh. Agree there.
I hope there isn't going to be a tragedy. But yeah, I think this is such a cool story, amazing art, kind of fun, the kind of play on stuff when you kind of see somebody see something and then you kind of see it again. So really impressive artistically what they're doing here. And, yeah, this is scary at times.
Scary at times. I feel like a lot of James's work lately, or some of it anyway, is about escalating dread. And this story, I don't know exactly where it's going or what, you know, we're seeing stuff happen, but I can't tell what type of story it is. It's just, to your point, Alex, the dread is escalating that it feels like something just really bad is going to happen next issue. But we're getting a lot of, like, Jersey Devil staring at things and people doing stuff, not getting along. And then now they're all going to be in the woods together. So, what was the book that we just finished? Actually, the Santa Claus killer book, had that same pattern of the deviant had the same pattern of escalating dread, and feel that here as well.
Storm number 8 from Marvel, written by Mirwa Ayodele, art by Lucas Wernick and Mario Santoro. We're following two paths here. One, Storm has to legally represent herself against the actions she took during X-Manhunt. And meanwhile, while she is gone from her Storm Shanks sanctuary, Maggot starts a fight club. Great book.
Oh, man.
There's an extra train here as well. Kane on the train, crazy train of the Thunder War.
Is that yes.
Between all of anybody who has, like, thunder and lightning powers.
Yes, which also leads to one of the funnier pages of the week where, what was it? It was Iron Man, Black Panther, Iron Man, and Mr. Fantastic are there. And Black Panther sees Storm, and Iron Man's like, ooh, do you want to hang out and see Storm? She's almost here. And Black Panther is like, no, I have to go see White Queen. And then it cuts to Mr. Fantastic with an arrow pointed to him that says, never been divorced or something.
Yeah,
like
happily
that.
Married, never divorced. Yeah, it is a strange. That's why
it's a weird shot. It's
I
a
love weird it, shot. I love that they can take these wild total swings in the book.
Yeah, them roasting each other for their relationships, though, I will say, like, Black Panther, like Tony Stark being like, hi, you want to see your ex Storm, which was by all purposes a very real relationship, intense, like a lot of like stakes, geopolitical stakes to it. And then Tony Stark and White Queen were like, we're sort of married, but also we're just trying to save mutants and the world. Was funny to me. A lot of continuity packed into a two-panel situation. But to your point, I feel like this book is just able to do so much and be super interesting in different ways. Like this giant, you know, super intergalactic Thunder War. At the same time, we get this very, like, well-told Homeland Security-type investigation story with a very interesting alien character who's doing the interrogating. And this book has by far the most consequences from the Manhunt story.
Mm-hmm.
Every other book, main X-Men title, has not referenced it once.
Yeah.
It's moved on completely with not a single touch point to it. We're going to get the repercussions of that in the upcoming space crossover that's happening, but, like, nothing, not a single other mention of it, except this has actual real story and emotional ramifications for Storm. Great book. This series is fantastic. If you're not reading this, I think it's the best X book going.
Whoa, that's crazy. Just to counter that a little bit, I was having a lot more fun with this until this issue a little bit. Like the weird nitrous smoking guy was kind of a little weird. But
I love that.
Well, I'm glad that you enjoy huffing nitrous. You know what I mean? That's cool. I'm happy for you.
He's just huffing nitrogen. Nitrous different.
Yeah, you're right. You know what I mean? But either way,
that's fun.
Let's agree they're two different gases, okay? And move on.
Let's just huff what we want to huff.
Yeah, huff what you're into, I guess. But yeah, that part kind of I was having a lot more fun, but then nitrogen guy kind of threw me out of the fun zone.
I'm sorry this one tiny thing really bothered you about the book. Birds
well, that
of Prey.
And the shots at the relationship stuff. I was just kind of like, what are we doing here? This
Maggot Fight Club? Come on.
Maggot Fight Club was fun, but then the Mr. Fantastic not being fantastic, just kind of walking
was
guy.
All the way at the beginning of the book.
Let's real quick shout out who's in the Maggot Fight Club. Because this was a collection of people I was like, wow, wild. I will name them.
I would
them.
Pay to see it. You know what I mean?
There's Gentle, She-Hulk, Juggernaut, Big Bertha coming off the top rope. You got Strong Guy, shouts, very Maggot era, makes sense, Maggot, obviously, Armor, and the real kicker is Abomination dropping in to fight.
Yeah.
What's his deal?
I just love the fact, and again, I think this was done really well for comedy, that Storm's like, okay, Maggot, whatever you do, don't throw a party here at the Storm Sanctuary. And he's like, no problem. But he has everybody on speed dial ready to have a gladiatorial style fight club the second she leaves. That's funny. I don't know.
Yeah.
I agree. It was funny. And I like everyone's just like, here we go again with this guy.
Birds of Prey, number 21 from DC Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Sammy Basri. The cliffhanger of the last issue was that Big Barda, not to be confused with Big Bertha, has seemingly been killed, but she's not quite dead. She is, in fact, rocketing towards Earth, and a new team of villains has targeted the whole Birds of Prey team, which I didn't realize officially includes John Constantine, but all right, we can kind of
roll with that.
Yeah,
I think that's
cool.
Nice.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm cool with it.
He's a bird.
I love how well Kelly Thompson can balance this whole team throughout the book. It's a really big, broad, expansive cast. There's a lot of things going on here, but they all have their different voices. They all have their own different missions, and it feels very well balanced.
Yeah, this is great. Amazing art, amazing team. I love all these characters and how they're being used. There's a ton of action in this. This is just such another amazing issue. These have been really great. I can't wait for more. This is just a glorious comic book, and they're in really good hands.
Yeah, the expansion, or the owning the expansion of the expanded team here, I thought was really cool. I like seeing where they could. Is everyone coming in for a mega event here? Mm-hmm. Maybe. I think they're going to need extra hands to fight Big Barda.
Uncanny Valley, number 9 from Boom Studios, written by Tony Fleece, art by Dave Wachter. In this issue, everything is coalescing on the cartoon world, which is losing all its ink. And we are following our human or part human characters as they try to save each other and battle, probably heading towards a Lord of the Rings style battle in the cartoon world. What do you guys think about this 9th issue?
I think we're heading to everyone's going to be tuned up. Everyone's going full loony. Just like me when I cook at the end of this. So that, I think, is going to be very fun. I like this book just keeps the fun tuneness of it alive. There's a great section here where our father-daughter team is he's showing her how to do cartoon stuff in a really fun way. Our human boy is trying to, figure out how to use the cartoon logic to get ahead.
Yes. It's just,
this book has been able to tread the line between the quote-unquote real world and the cartoon world really well and continues to have fun dancing between both.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And holy fleece and shit, this is a great comic. It's also great because I feel justified in all the time and energy I've spent watching cartoons that I was like, yeah, cartoon logic hit your head, one past the star, you get you a bird. So, yeah, I loved all that. That was just really fun. And, just amazing artistic kind of style on here with this kind of real world versus animated world. And, I really am having a blast with this.
You use a lot of cartoon logic in your day-to-day, right, Pete?
Yeah, it really blows up in my face.
Yeah, like when you want to get out of a Zoom meeting, you throw a giant black hole onto the wall and die.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I'm always like, Pete season, Alex season, Pete season, Alex season.
Yeah, Lady if you Baltimore. Use a bike pump to try to blow up your clothes to get out of an interview as well, that doesn't work. Just a heads up.
Lady Baltimore, by the way, I've really been enjoying your LinkedIn page. You have some great tips on there. Lady Baltimore, the Daughters of Medusa, number 1 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Mike Mignola and Christopher Golden, art by Bridget Connell. This is, there's a bunch of Gorgons in here.
The Gorgonzolas. This is awesome. It's cool to see kind of Medusa fucking shit up here with this kind of clan of Medusas, if you will. Yeah, they're pretty hardcore, but amazing art, really cool story. I think that it's also weird because it's like, oh, you know what would be great is instead of Lady Baltimore, Hellboy should be kind of on this adventure.
Mike Mignola, biggest output of his entire career and still just edging us with no Hellboy this entire time. Every new book is like, this is the skinniest little edge of a toe dipped into the Hellboy universe. And this one's the most out of a lot of them that we've had lately. But it's still an interesting story. There's a lot of backstory laid down here that felt a little bit dense to get through, but I do like where it ends up.
JSA number 7 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Rafael De La Torre. I think we skipped an issue or two of this book, which is my bad, but we pick up here with...
They missed a big event, clearly.
The Wildcat is dead, and everybody is reeling from that, but the JSA is back together for the most part on Earth. Or are they? Are they out of danger? There might be some danger right behind them. DuckTales.
Oh. Dude. Batman's a real douchebag. Am I right? I mean, come on, man. It's just been a funeral. You don't have to be such a dick, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Batman comes in. There's a section here where Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman show up late for a funeral, and they're like, hey, this is dumb. How about you guys just let us do stuff?
And yeah, like, we're in charge.
What the hell? This feels wrong in so many ways.
Yeah. Especially after a funeral, you know what I mean?
But it's like minutes after the funeral. They go to the site of the funeral to be like, you think Batman is like, let's go, it's fine. I'm late to funerals all the time, it's cool. Let's go yell at these guys.
Do they have a buffet? I want to see if they have a buffet.
Yeah, nothing better than a funeral buffet. Just loading up on stuff, especially like, obviously, you got the salads, you got your meat station, the dessert bar at a funeral.
Oh, my God.
Rank your favorite buffets. All you can eat, strip club, funeral, top three.
Funerals are usually pretty good, though.
Dude, you're going to leave out China buffet, bro? Come on.
Yeah. But the funeral buffet, you usually get like some of the deceased's favorite meals, like as a fun bit on the side. And you're like, oh, I didn't know he liked mac and cheese so much that we could have three types of it.
Exactly. Like at Pete's funeral when we'd have a fun dip buffet and everyone dies afterwards.
Yeah, my funeral is going to be crazy, dude. The amount of food that's going
to
be there.
Now, at a fun dip buffet, just to check, is it a bunch of steam tables with different fun packets of fun dip in it? Or is it a steam thing? Like just
I hope there's not a lot of steam underneath the fun dip.
It's the sugar.
It's all different kinds of sugar, and you get your own kind of like dips to try the different sugar
flavors. Okay, so everybody's dipping into the same thing. You all have your fun dip sticks. Your
no sticks. Pete wants straight tongues. Tongue to the dip station.
So Pete's funeral is some sort of fun dip orgy, is what we're saying.
Yeah.
That's what he described it.
Yep.
His lawyer was like, do you want me to write fun dip orgy in your will? He said, that should be the title of the will. And he's like, okay.
All right. Wills don't usually have titles, but okay.
5 o'clock, Pete's fun dip orgy. Is this where the deceased is? Yes. He's in the corner.
He's somewhere under there. We have to free the body or
we got to lick through this fun dip to find the corpse. And then we may pay our respects.
That doesn't seem too much, does it?
I will say, I feel like you are someone that would like to be buried in fun dip instead of dirt.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Let me ask you a question. I understand you'd like to be buried in fun dip. Would you also like to die being buried in fun dip? Like, that's how you go? You're at the fun dip factory, there's an accident, it starts pouring on you.
Yeah, you're like the Joker of the fun dip.
What is the draw? Is the draw the fun dip or is it the sticks?
The fun dip.
Okay, I'm just checking.
Wait, you think he likes the sticks?
I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
What do you like about eating, the food or the spoon?
Because here's the thing, if you like the fun dip, you could just get sugar. You could just go and
it is just sugar that they lightly dyed the vaguely different color.
Barely even size a flavor or anything like that.
Oh, watch your mouth. We mean barely has a flavor.
We're going to do a blindfolded taste test where I'm going to put out a bunch of fun dip.
I can guess all the flavors.
And you're going to tell me the colors. Okay, great.
Yeah. No question.
Here's the secret. It's all just going to be regular grocery store sugar. And you're going to be like, nope. It's going to be a big gotcha, and that's why you will kill me.
We'll have to do a double funeral.
Double funeral.
Double dipping. In Bloom, number 4 from Boom Studios, written by Michael W. Conrad, art by John J. Pearson with Lola Bonato. We are following a world where people bloom. Basically, they turn into plant people at different points. There is a detective who cannot bloom because he has cancer, and he is fighting back against the bloom people. This is the big action issue with a bunch of blooms coming out of different places and them shooting and blowing them up and killing them, and pretty violent.
Yeah.
Yes. My favorite part of this issue was the reality. They do a pretty deep dive into a reality show here, similar to the Fantastic Four fanfare short we talked about earlier. That is interesting. It's Bloomhouse, a reality competition show about people blooming, who can bloom.
Is the joke Bloomhouse, like the producer? Is that the joke?
Very much. It is called the Bloom House, so very much could be. The rest of the issue, I was like, I don't know exactly what's happening here with all of the just people killing each other. I also feel like this book hits different now that Last of Us is airing again. Because this issue especially, I was like, oh, this is like a scene from that show.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I think this is a messier issue than the previous one, though, like you said, I did like the reality show parody. But we get to a place at the end that brings it back to the main emotional thrust of this detective character that I thought was pretty gross and pretty interesting. So I'm curious to see what happens in the next and, I believe, final issue.
Boom in the bloom. I liked them kind of like stopping to watch that reality show in the guard station there. I thought that was a cool moment, but otherwise just artistically, I like what they're doing.
Justice League, The Atom Project, number 5 from DC Comics, written by John Ridley and Ryan Parrott, art by Mike Perkins. In this issue, we find out who has been pulling the strings behind what's been going on with Captain Atom and The Atom Project. And it is none other than Inferno, which is the terrorist organization also known as the Legion of Doom from outside of time. It's a little confusing, but go read Justice League Unlimited if you want to know more about that. I got to tell you, I was really enjoying this series up until this issue when it reminded me how weird it is that the Legion of Doom has been dressing up in cloaks and pretending to be something else.
Yes.
Not great. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of an external thing, but it feels like we went from a really tightly constructed series about these three guys all kind of named Adam in a very, like, born identity fugitive type situation to suddenly swerving into crossover territory that that bummed me out a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you. It got so – this book – was doing some like interesting commentary on like how government and society takes advantage of people and what power means, how power is shifted between people and the things that the atoms are willing to do to just do their job essentially. I thought that was really cool. And then it pivots to some very like Saturday morning cartoon, like, hey, it was us all along in a way that I thought would undercut a little bit of the stuff I was into with this. But I do think we are going to get another issue here that I think may bring everything together. I trust the writers here.
Mm-hmm. I agree with a lot of the things being said, but I also thought the art had a kind of cool old school feel to it, which I enjoyed.
Yeah, Mike Perkins is great and draws a really messed up Legion of Doom. Like, they're scary. So there you go. Speaking of scary, The Creeping Below, number 3, we have a lot of plant horror going on in this stack.
Yeah, we do.
Boom Studios, written by Brian Azzarello, art by Vanessa Del Rey. This comic is about a woman who was taken by a black metal band and buried beneath a tree back in the day. She has returned to terrorize them. Really like the art in here. I wish I knew what was going on.
Yeah, it's a little spare in the old words department, this book. But I think, you know, I feel like what Brian Azzarello is doing here is having it be more of a vibe than anything. Like, it's not about getting into like who and why and what exactly the narrative is here. It's like, you get it. This woman was taken advantage of and murdered by these people, and she's coming for revenge. And here are the art that does a lot of that, the establishing the mood and pushing the action forward.
Was this the one, by the way, that started off with like, and I'm kind of making this up, but started off with 1 week from now, 6 hours ago, now, 3 months from now, and it kept jumping around to time where I was like, what is, I don't know how these time periods relate to each other.
There was an interlude and end interlude that kicked off this issue.
Okay.
Anyway. Yeah, this is creepy as shit and kind of confusing in the beginning, but it's got a great team, so I'm going to keep checking it out, hoping to get to be able to wrap my head around it a little bit more. But some really impressive art that is body horror and creepy as fuck.
Poison Ivy, number 33 from DC Comics, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Marcio Takara. I feel like this one is some plant horror that's a little easier to hold on to. Poison Ivy and her new flower-faced friend, formerly enemy.
Undine,
thank you, are repairing the world or the town of Marshview that has been destroyed from back in the day. Now they are turning it into a plant, potentially human down the road, paradise. But there are forces working against them, including Janet from HR.
Janet!
Who is dying and may be betraying Poison Ivy at the same time.
Oh my God,
great
Janet.
Book, great every issue. Heartbreaking stuff happening with Janet.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about every single issue of this comic, and I think we've been hyper-positive on all of them. The Janet from HR, Poison Ivy relationship, especially in comparison, like, it's hard to call it a love triangle because I don't quite know, but with Harley, because I sort of, this book makes me want to root for Janet and and Poison Ivy being together. Like, it's hard to tell who feel like Janet feels like she does love Poison Ivy. I feel like she reciprocates that a bit, but now it's a little bit convoluted by the politics of the different, you know, plantness, the green and all of that. So I don't know. It's a complicated, it's interesting. I'm leaning in on it. I'm very curious how this is going to pay off, especially it feels like Janet's story is maybe coming to some sort of a conclusion.
Well, and also we got a scene in here where Undyne is like, I don't feel human touch anymore. I'm a plant person. I would kill people, but you can touch me. And so Ivy takes off her pants and lies down with him. He takes off his clothes and lies down with her. And it's a really interesting scene as well, where at first I was like, is there something romantic going on with him? But I think it's more like a mother holding a child is the way that they
skin
frame it.
Skin to skin. It felt very skin to skin.
Exactly. So really interesting dynamics with everybody going on in this book.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. This has been really awesome. This issue got a little weird with the, I only feel a human when someone hugs me, and it's like, all right, flower guy, I guess I'll hug you so you can feel human again. That old excuse. You know what I mean?
Is that Pete eschews human touch?
Yes.
He lives in the bell tower all alone, and nobody has touched him in years.
I'm just saying, we've all heard the excuse of like, hey, I really need a hug. It makes me feel human. You know what I mean?
And we've all like, heard that?
Yeah. And then someone's like, fine, I'll take off my pants and hug you. And it's like, okay. You know what I mean? So
I think we're in the territory of private opinion.
But Janet from HR has broken my heart. And I don't know if I'll ever recover.
Sad. Adventure Time, number 2 from Oni Press, written by Nick Wynn and Derek Ballard, art by Asia Simone and Derek Ballard. Our two best buds are on the trail of a quest when they get waylaid with another quest involving a well. Justin, you are our Adventure Time guy. I think you liked, but were a little hesitant about the first issue.
I liked the first issue. It felt a little bit like treating us as if we've never heard of Adventure Time. And I guess that's what you want in a number one. But also I'm like, the people that are picking this up are Adventure Time fans. Mm-hmm. So we know a lot about them. And it continues a bit in this issue where there's definitely, like, so much introduction of characters. I'm like, I've seen all of these characters because I watched the show. But outside of that, like, we get some classic Finn Flame Princess stuff. We get everybody's trying to bust some great rhymes throughout this. That's what the central story hooks on. It's interesting to me that Billy is sort of the person they're chasing after in the first issue and ostensibly in this issue, and then that all gets basically dispensed with, and it doesn't feel like they're coming back to that next issue either. So I'm curious what the superstructure of this this story is.
I'm just kind of flipping back through. I don't remember Busta Rhymes being in this one. But I do think that this, you know, if you do love Adventure Time, you should love it. You know, the art style kind of is reminiscent of the cartoon, and I think it does a great job of capturing the voices. So this is fun. Adventure Time is great, and this is fun.
Secret Six, number three from DC Comics, written by Nicole Maines, art by Steven Segovia. In this issue, the team is finally together and gets out of the house that they've been hanging out in and go to a club where a bunch of different things go down. They also get makeovers, fabulous makeovers with their costumes. I thought this is the issue where things felt like they started to really come together with the series. Like, we had a lot of setup so far. Now we're starting to understand that with this team, there's some good, interesting interactions. I thought the interaction between Deadshot and Catman was interestingly, like, per our previous discussion, kind of undertones of romance going on there, which I was surprised by. And there's continues to be some good stuff with Dreamer, Gossamer, and Superboy as well. Black Alice is kind of just there as, like, the chaos element, I feel like, at this point.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I like this title.
I agree. I agree with all of what you said. I like them. Just a question. Silver Banshee is revealed as a villain here. Isn't she dating Jimmy Olsen?
Yes.
Isn't she?
Yeah, she was.
So I'm curious what, because this feels like some straight villainy happening here. I wonder if they're going to square that circle or let that just hang in the air.
Pete?
Well, I want to kind of, you know, that relationship aside, because I do think Banshee and Jimmy Olsen are a good couple, and I do ship them. But I want to kind of talk about the art style. I love how kind of bright this is. It kind of reminds me a little bit of like a pastel or kind of like an airbrush style, which is really cool. We get a lot of dark comics. So this is just kind of a nice change of pace.
Bright for the club, I will say. It's bright for the club.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I enjoyed this. Thought the ending was a little whatever. But, yeah, I'm excited for what's to happen.
Jump Scare, number three from Dark Horse Comics, written by Cullen Bunn, art by Denny Lucker. This is focused on the title character who has the power to create weapons out of horror movies she's seen. However, there's a wildly bigger mythology that they're playing with in this issue involving a Leviathan and a cult around it. The Leviathan gives people powers, so there's good people with powers, bad people with powers, a conspiracy as old as time. So lots happening.
Yes, yeah. And I really like this book. I feel like it really brings it's like the emerging of a new hero in a world that you really just follow her. The strong personality they've created for Jump Scare is really working. I feel like the art by Danny Luckard it reminded me of Tony Harris back on Ex Machina back in the day in a good way. It's really clean while still being complex and fully realized scenes happening here. A lot of like stringing, I think ramen, she calls this. I don't want to be killed by a ramen monster.
Yeah, it's kind of gross.
It's just a nice blend of just like cut 'em up action with a larger horror underlying mythology that's being created.
Yeah, I really enjoy this. I love the pace of this. The action's awesome. You got some really cool, interesting characters here. Yeah, I'm having a blast with this, even though I'm scared.
Jump Scared. Plague House, number two from Oni Press, written by Michael W. Conrad, art by Dave Chisholm. In this issue, our supernatural investigators have seemingly taken the haunting that they found in a house and started to let it get out into other places. That's meanwhile, some of them still don't really even believe in ghosts at all, and that's something as a team they're really dealing with this issue. I love the ambition of this book to take the classic haunted house story and really blow it out in bigger ways. There's some disturbing things that are happening throughout here. Very interesting start.
Yeah, I agree. I think it is an interesting start. Also, artistically, some really impressive panels here. I love a lot of the layouts and the kind of tone that it sets. Yeah, I'm excited to read more. I think they do a good job of stringing you along, giving you just enough information and that kind of stuff. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen.
Nice. The I worked on a live version of Ghost Adventures years ago now. So I was really feeling that while I was reading this and the different personalities.
Oh my God, the guy on the cover does kind of look like you a little bit. You know what I mean?
That's me. Yeah. But on the comic side of things, this has a little bit of the energy of Homesick Pilots. Mm-hmm. Oh. A little less like comedy driven, more sort of edging into the horror, the classic horror side of it. But that's a comp I would make. If you like that book, you would probably like this one.
And that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support this show and all the shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube.
Sure.
Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! Please keep sending us your private opinions, which are the opinions that you say into your pillow right before you fall asleep.
Oh, wow.
McCrispy strips are now at McDonald's. I hope you're ready for the most dippable chicken in McDonald's history. Dip it in all the sauces. Dip it in that hot sauce in your bag. Dip it in your McFlurry. Your dip is your business. McCrispy strips at McDonald's.
Now at Verizon, we're locking in low prices for 3 years, guaranteed, on my plan. And you can get a single line for just $45 a month when you switch and bring your phone. That's our best price ever on unlimited welcome, with autopay plus taxes and fees, guaranteed for 3 years. Because at Verizon, we got you. Visit your local Chicago Verizon store today. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Price guarantee applies to then current base monthly rate. Additional terms and conditions apply.